So, like, you're just going to sit in your car for the next hour?
Yeah.
Good.
It's where I feel most comfortable.
I know. It's where you spend the most of your time.
Yes, sir.
The other day when you were at the house, you were taking pictures of those cute little puppies and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to take the mama to the vet today. She's got mastitis, you know, it's like on that, on those two back feeders.
you're telling me about that.
Yeah. Nipples or what? Teats or
teats? Teats.
Yeah. Somebody's gonna get mad at me when they hear this and say some sort of like, they're called this. I don't know.
So I like feeder.
Those two back.
I like feeders too.
Those two back feeders are all clogged up. We've been having her on antibiotics, and they've been sore. And we feel sorry for her, you know, but. Finally, just gotten bad, and the antibiotics hadn't helped. We've been having to go out like 3 times a day and help her feed the puppies. And like,
now, do you have to get in there and those ones that aren't working? Because that, I mean, if you had goats and that mama goat, if one of those gets plugged up, you'd have to go in there and, you know,
absolutely
squeeze that shit out.
We have been Rebecca and I have been midwifing like hell. Is that what it's called? Is that a midwife that does those
sure.
things?
Yes, sir.
On a goat, they're called udders.
Udders, yeah.
Hey, you're about to get that every other weekend thing when we leave to go to work this week, and then you're off, and then you come back. See?
Yeah.
Every other weekend.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just been a real big pain in the ass, to be honest with you. Puppies are cute, man. 8 out of 10 of them have
I bet lived. It has been for that mama, too.
Oh, it's been a pain in her ass. I feel so bad for her. She just feels like shit. You can just see it on her face. She's so defeated.
Jack just hanging out.
But Josh was over the other day and got to see him. But Josh, who is Josh? Well, what is this? And who are we? This is a couple in with Cody Jinks and my lifelong hetero mate touring and whatnot, bass player.
And life in general.
Life in general, extraordinaire. Josh Thompson coming out of Boyd, Texas.
I'm doing well. This Josh was not seeing those puppies, so we'll have to see what Josh we're talking about.
Yeah. See, I wasn't even talking to that. I guess both of you are my Josh's, but I'd have to say Thompson is more my Josh, you know, whenever I'm conversationally. Coming out of just outside of Alexandria, Louisiana. Am I right? You at home today? Sporting his OSU garb right there. And he always has there's a reason behind everything he wears that has sports teams on it. So we'll get into that later. Bobby Keith Kilgore, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are y'all?
Yeah. Milking puppies or milking dogs. You know. I literally just washed my hands and came in here and was like, Seth, can you hear me? Like, yeah, all right, I'm going to go grab a beer. Speaking of Seth, noseworthy coming just outside of Nashville, Tennessee, turning the knobs. You can't hear him. You can't see him, but he's there. And he does a lovely job for us. Hope you're doing well, buddy. Josh. Who is Josh? Josh Morningstar. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thank you for having me on. I have no problem. If you want to label me and Thompson 1 and 2, I have no problem being 2.
You would be a solid number 2, brother.
I have no problem with it, man. I know that relationship goes back damn near 20 years, so I will gladly take the number 2.
You can be my number 2. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, if you know,
that sounds like a song title.
Well, I was just thinking of like, if you can't love the, you can't be with one you love the one you're with, right? I don't know. Exactly. Is that weird? Oh man! Well, I know you. You already had a busy start to your day, and you've had a busy week. You were at my house 4 days ago, and then you went. You and Cass Jones came down and stayed with me and my wife for a couple of days in the guest a day or two in the guest house, and you had Cass Jones with you. And man, we got to catch up, and I couldn't remember how long it had been since we'd seen each other not playing. And it had been a while.
A long time. Long time. We caught you in Macon, and it was a great show, but show days are always crazy. You don't get, you know, to hang out much. But yeah, it was great to see you again, man. This is my first time seeing Bobby Keith and Josh, quote unquote, seeing Bobby Keith and Josh in a long time. Hello, gentlemen.
I hope you're well. It has been a long time. It's good to see you, man.
Mm-hmm. You too. What's OSU? Is that Ohio State?
Nah, this is Oklahoma State. They played the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl and they won. So I had to go with that. I don't have any Georgia stuff because I was glad they won last night too.
Gotcha.
I think everybody was glad Georgia won last night.
Yeah.
But well, all right, Josh. I'll just set this up. Try to give people some backstories. Last episode, we were lucky enough to have another one of my really, really good songwriting friends and buddies and brothers on. Tennessee Jet was on last time with us. And, Josh Morningstar is a writer that I hold in the highest regard. It doesn't get any better than Josh Morningstar. It doesn't get any better than Tennessee Jet. The first time, Josh, I was trying to recount like I always do, and things get hazy after years and beers and weed and all the stuff, you know. First time was in Hagerstown, Maryland. We played together, right?
Yes, sir.
Your hometown. You're a Maryland boy. Yeah. And was that 15 or 16?
That I'm unsure of.
I think 16.
16?
I think it was 16. It's been a couple years ago now, but somebody sent me a screenshot of a tweet that I had sent to you in 2012, trying to get you to come up to Maryland, to do some shows. And then it finally happened in 2016. And when I found out that it was that you guys were coming, it was you and Whitey. And I think Sonny was on the show too.
Yeah, it was us. It was White. And actually, I found that concert shirt the other day. It was a pretty cool concert shirt. It was me, you, Sonny, Whitey, and Billy Don Burns emceed it.
That's right. Yep, that's right. When I found out you were coming, I tracked down the guy that was throwing the festival. I was like, man, you got to put me on. You got to put me on, please. You got to. And he did. And, yeah, that was the first time. I think y'all had just gotten rid of the RV and had moved into a bus that had like an 18 wheeler front on it. If I'm remembering correctly, you had just gotten rid of Dolly not too long before. And we're in your first bus and the front of it looked like a tractor trailer front, but then the back was a bus. And I thought it was the coolest thing, 'cause I'd never seen something like that before.
Yeah, you didn't ever have to ride in that one. That
It looked good from the outside.
Yeah.
I think Cody still got a scar from that thing.
I do. I got thrown out of my bunk on that one. That was a rough one.
Well, and what I remember about seeing Josh, like, I don't really vividly remember things, but for some reason that show, and maybe just because of the relationship that came out of that, but I remember you, I don't remember if it was a white or like a baby blue suit, but you had this badass get up with this straight brim white hat and you had this really, really cool look to you. But what made me watch you, was I noticed that you had a bunch of old guys playing, they were backing you. And I think I even turned to Cody. I said, man, if this dude has a bunch of old dudes backing him, then he must be worth a shit, because those guys wouldn't give him the time of day if he sucked. But no,
and a female bassist.
Absolutely. But it was a really, really, like I said, for some reason, I just really remember vividly that kind of first meeting with you, which was really cool.
I used to get dressed up before I got old and lazy. Now it's just like, yeah, fuck it.
Well, I never got dressed up, man. So I just always said, fuck it. You know, no, you're a snazzy dresser. When you pulled up the other day, I was like, dude, I was like, you look like you could be a cast member in the Goodfellas. He had this really rad coat on that belonged to your great, great grandfather.
my great grandfather.
Your great grand. That would have been like 17. I don't know. And it was just sweet and just in super cool condition. And you had these kick ass black bell bottoms on. It's like, man, I couldn't pull that off, man. Morningstar could pull off looking cool like that. And like you're saying, and that I remember what your suit you were talking about, you know, when we were up in Maryland with him, you know, just snazzy. But I just look like shit all the time anyway. So,
well, see, man, some of us can sing our asses off and write great songs and have kick-ass beards and all of that. And others of us need to pull out certain tricks. Like, we got to dress up. We got to find cool old coats that our great grandfathers used to wear and that kind of shit. So I use the tricks that are available to me.
Yeah. whatever you can do, buddy.
That's right, man. That's right.
Has nothing to do with your writing capabilities at all. But man, you've obviously come a long way from there, because the second time I can remember seeing you was we were staying in Nashville, Josh. I don't know if we were recording, Keith. I don't know what we were doing.
But yeah, we were staying at that big house.
We were staying at that big ass mansion house over there in that I don't know what part of town that is. But it's a part that has a bunch of money in Nashville. Anyway, we had this like 9,000-foot mansion we had rented, and I kept getting lost in it, and everybody knows about my problems with that, but it was a cool house. But we got to hang out there, you and me and Kendall Marvel got to hang out some. But before that, you'd been playing, you were playing downtown, and Josh said, hey man, and it was Layla's, right?
Yeah.
You were playing downtown at Layla's at like the bullshit time of day. What was your slot?
It was Tuesday lunch shift. I would drive from Maryland at Monday night to play Tuesday lunch shift, turn around, drive back to Maryland to put my kids on the bus Wednesday morning and play at this little bar back home Wednesday night, and then would head out on the road Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, drive back to Maryland Monday to see wife and kids Monday evening, then leave that night to drive to Layla's. I did that for like 2 years, 2.5 years, something like that. It's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy.
And that was that's like a 16-hour drive, right, Josh?
Yeah, about 12. It's about 12
or 12.
So, yeah, which still ain't nothing to scoff at. You know what I mean? 12 hours is pretty long way still.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I did that for 2 years, man. And then she wasn't willing to move me out of the lunch shift because it was just me. I didn't have a band willing to travel at the time. So after 2 years, I was like, man, enough of that. So, man, I remember that house y'all were staying in. That was the first time I had ever been inside a house like that. Like, you know, I grew up.
Me too.
Us too. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I remember walking around just like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
It was pretty cool, man.
I had the same moment with that house. Was all, you could tell Alexa to turn the lights on, but this was years ago, like 5 years ago. So this was still newer Alexa type stuff. It was the first time I'd been in an environment like my room had its own wing on.
That's right.
You know, like my room and bathroom were as big as the first house that Rebecca and I bought. And I'm not joking. And it was, I walked in the first night we were there, and you know, I was obviously drunk. And I walked into my room and I start flipping light switches, and I'm like, shit, I don't know where anything's at. This room's freaking ginormous. I'm getting pissed off. Like, really, I'm not, you know, I'm just like, I'm irritated. And I'm like, I'm staying in this freaking house that's probably costing me. I still don't know how that house costs to rent. It's probably costing me a shit ton of money to rent. And I can't find the fucking light switch. And then I remembered a conversation that Seth had with me earlier today. And I'm not the best listener when people are talking to me, especially when it's part of my crew that are telling me something I need to know. And Seth, just this little voice went off. It said, lights are controlled by Alexa. And it was Seth's voice. And I said, Alexa, turn on the lights. And some bitches came on. But I remember you and me and Kendall sitting on that back porch, having a couple of day beers and smoking a little bit. And That's really, I didn't know you that well at that time. Obviously we had just barely met and I really didn't know Kendall that well at that time, but you guys had been writing a little bit and, you know, and both of you guys have obviously, we've all become very good friends and we've all written, you know, three of us have written together. We'll get into that later too, but I remember you telling me about you driving 12 hours, playing the lunch show, driving 12 hours back and doing the school routine. And I remember thinking, like, that's some stupid shit we used to do. Like, this guy's got to be awesome. You know, this is like, this is the real deal. Cause I'd already heard you play. I mean, I liked your songs. I knew you were good, you know, but like just the dedication and the drive and the things that, you know, and now looking back on those days, you probably go, I don't know how I did that.
I don't, man. Like I had to drive 8 hours up here to Maryland this morning and I stood up at the end of the drive and could barely stand up. And it made me think back to all this craziness that I used to do, which I still do, you know, a little bit. Like I said, I was just at your house 4 days ago and now I'm in Maryland and played a show and went to the house in Tennessee, you know, so I'm still pretty stupid, but I'm not as stupid as I used to be. And, man, it's just more and more, you think back on, they say the good old days, you don't realize you're in the good old days till they're past. And that's the truth, man. And you wouldn't think that, you know, 12-hour drives to play a lunch shift would be looked back fondly on, but they are, man. They are. And I'm sure the same for you guys. I'm sure it was a lot simpler for you playing, you know, 8 hours on a Friday night or whenever your residency was there. There wasn't, you know, all these people that depended, you know, I guarantee it was a lot simpler then. And I'm sure there are points where you guys look back on it as, you know, how do we get here? And it was also simple then and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the song that you and I wrote together, Hurricane, that, you know, you started that song with me in mind, which, you know, you seem to be good at that, which, you know, you can write as well for somebody else as I've ever, you know, seen. And, you know, that's one of those songs that, you know, you sent the song to me and I said, you know, man, could we do this to that second verse? And I didn't even touch the first verse. The first verse was there. The chorus was there. It's like, can we do this for the, you know, second verse and whatnot? And like you came back with something else and I was like, yeah. And that's really exactly what we're talking about. You know, it's really talking about, you know, the good old days and what happens, you know, what has happened, you know, in my career and consequently yours as well, because, you know, I've got a whole bunch of songs right here in front of me that, you know, you and I have written together and, you're a big part of that story, man. Let's see. It started with Must Be the Whiskey, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Josh actually sent me that song first, probably.
I wasn't going to bring that up, man.
Oh, no, that's all right. I think I've told Cody this before, but if not, hey, this is why we do this podcast.
I don't know that I know the story. You guys have been hiding secrets.
No, yeah.
Oh, no, it's not a secret.
Well, shit. Yeah, Josh actually sent me that song probably 6 months before I showed it to you, Cody. Maybe three or four. And I really liked it. And Josh was like, hey, what do you think? I said, man, I really like where you're going with it. I said, but you have about 80% way too many words in what Cody is going to sing. And so he's like, okay. I mean, this thing had like six verses. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was 6.5 minutes long.
So you're saying it was a regular Josh Morningstar song.
It was a regular Josh Morningstar song. But you know, Josh, like I said, I loved it and I saw the potential in it immediately. And I said, hey man, I think you need to rewrite, take some stuff out. Let's make it a little more concise. And he did. And that's when I said, okay, I think you're really close. And that's when I showed it to you, Cody. And the rest is history.
At that point, I'd only met you, spent any time with you, in Hagerstown. And I don't, maybe that day at Layla's it happened, but I still wasn't comfortable. I'm not person that's gonna, hey man, listen to my song, hey man, listen to my, you know what I mean, because I'm just grateful for the relationships that I have, and friendship is more important to me than any kind of business stuff, and I didn't want to cross that line. but I knew that I had this song and it wasn't right for me and it wasn't right for anyone else I could think of because it was you from the moment I wrote it. But I didn't want to cross that line. Like, hey man, listen to my stuff. Cause you guys were on a serious upswing and I didn't want to be looked at as any kind of opportunist or anything like that. Cause I was just grateful for you guys' friendship because aside from any musical stuff, you're just genuinely good people, man. And I like surrounding myself with those types of people. So I didn't want to cross that line. But so it was a bit of a dilemma. I had this song that I knew would be great for you. But on the other hand, I didn't want to, you know, be that guy. We all know that guy, you know, and I didn't want to be it. So the compromise I came up with in my head was send it to Josh. And if Josh likes it, maybe then it'll find its way to Cody somehow. So I sent it to Josh and Josh said, man, too many words. So I did a little bit of editing. And at the time I was going live on Facebook every morning, Monday through Friday, in addition to you know, running around like a madman. So on my Facebook live stream every day, I would start playing it and I'd say, if anybody knows Cody, tell him I got a song for him. If anybody knows Cody, tell him I got a song for him. And then y'all did the Ryman. You did two nights at the Ryman. And I came down I was there for the first show. I didn't have tickets to the second, but I was there for the first show. And I tell this story on stage that I've never been at a concert where you could feel this feeling of like achievement and pride, people being proud of and for you and the accomplishment, you know, what you achieved that night, and just this sense of love in the air. Like it was a tangible thing. Like you could reach out and grab a handful of achievement or something. It was so cool. And I've never felt that at a concert before or since. So a couple of days later, I remember Josh had already given you Must Be the Whiskey, I think. But a couple of days after that, after the first Ryman show, Cody, I text you and I said, man, that was so beautiful. You know, I'm so glad I was there. You know, thank you. And you had texted me back and said, you know, whatever. And then what? You didn't say whatever.
I thought that's what you said.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
Yeah. But you said, we're getting ready to go in and work on what turned out to be Lifers. Do you have anything, you know, that would work? And I was like, well, fuck it. Here we go. And I sent that off. And like 30 minutes later, you sent me back a guitar vocal. And I still have that guitar vocal on my phone of you, just you and your guitar doing Must Be the Whiskey that you sent me. And I still listen to it from time to time, man. Just that one little phone recording meant so fucking much to me, man, and still does, because that's that kind of, well, not a kind of, that is what got the ball rolling on our working relationship, which has been pretty damn fruitful, man. We have, you know, three Texas radio number ones at this point with a fourth one on the way, and hopefully, cross fingers, it's crazy to sit and think about, man. It's crazy.
Well, you know, and like I said, I've got the list here. We've written so much that we've actually released together and or that you wrote and I wasn't even on. Must Be the Whiskey, Which One I Feed, which was you and Jada Dreyer. The Plea, which was just you. Don't Rain in California, which you had started, and I helped you finish the same day I had started, and you helped me finish Tell Them What It's Like. Mm-hmm. Ain't a Train, which has been, since we wrote it, my favorite song to play live, just bar none. Love it. Dying Isn't Cheap, which you and Kendall Marvel wrote, and I was supposed to be on that, right?
That's right.
And I ended up not being able to make it. That was during COVID, during all the Zoom call meetings we had to figure out how to navigate through.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I've told people this too, because I make the joke, you know, it's like I was supposed to be on that right for that song. And it's such a great song. And we just put it on the new record. But it's like, it's a joke because I'm not mad about it. If I would have been on the song wouldn't have come out the way it did. You know,
it would have been different. Yeah.
It would have been different, but the way it came out was really good. It was really great. So, you know, we put that on the record. And, like a hurricane, feeding the flames.
Which is my favorite. It was any song that you guys have recorded that I've had a hand in helping with. That's my favorite.
Feeding the flames, man. That's my favorite.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Just there's something about the way y'all do that chorus, man, and the way it comes out of the verses. It just really does it for me, guys. It really does it for
me. We do what we can. No, I'm just kidding, man.
I think it's Hot Rod's favorite one too, off the record.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. I might be mistaken, but you know. And then there's a couple that we recorded that we've written together that, you know, we've recorded and haven't released or haven't yet recorded. So,
well, now you're leaving a couple that you have recorded off of there.
Which
that
ones
haven't been released? Yesterday Again, Me, You, and Ward.
Oh, that was Me, You, and Ward. Yes. Yeah. Dead Gummit. See, I knew I was going to miss some. That's a great problem to have.
All It Cost Me Was Everything.
Holy crap. I forgot that too.
Yeah.
And wow. Those are two.
Dined In Cheap, Feeding the Flames, All It Cost Me Was Everything. And there's Like a Hurricane. You mentioned that one.
Okay. Yeah. And I forgot the freaking single that we wrote together. The newest.
which that is my favorite song to play live right now is All It Cost Me Was Everything. I freaking love that. That thing's a jam, dude.
Yeah.
I was working on that song yesterday evening. We're about to go back out on a run and we haven't been on the road in a month. So I sit in my office and go through my songs and, you know, make sure I remember all the words. And, I was playing that song last night and, you know, my family's just used to me playing guitar and singing stuff like that. But I was working on that song last night and Rebecca came and opened the door to my office and just stood there and listened to it, you know, and, she doesn't always do that, but she loves that song. So you
know. That's awesome, man. I remember when we wrote, tell them what it's like going out in the kitchen and playing it for her and her getting a little choked up about it. And I have no shame in admitting when you first played that verse and chorus from you had the verses. All I did was help pull that chorus out. You had the verses completed. And I no shame in telling you, I cried when you first played those verses for me in your office. That's what is the great thing about music, man, that it can elicit those type of reactions, you know?
I loved the verse, and that's one of my favorite songs to play live too. I love playing that song. And we play it every show, but I remember when you came over and, I showed you those verses and then you literally just spit that chorus right out, the progression and the words at the same time. It was like, you didn't even sit there and like fiddle with it. You just went right into it.
Man, it's because the verses were so beautiful. My biggest fear, anything with you, and you can ask your manager about this. I text him about once a week saying, have I fucked Cody's career up yet? Because you work, you know, you're kind enough to let me help out in the ways that I do. And I know what Josh look is. It's a real thing. So any moment I'm expecting the fucking dive bomb, man. So I text hard about once a week saying, have I fucked things up yet? But with that song, I was so afraid. That I was going to fuck it up because the verses are so beautiful, man. And they were so vulnerable and they came from such a real place that I had that fear. But at the same time, I could, not just me, but anybody that does this for a living, or I'd imagine any type of traveling, whether it be trucking or whatever it is, can relate to that so much that I guess the fear was kind of lessened a little bit. Because it was so relatable to me and I think that's why, you know, it just kind of came pouring out, was because it was so, I felt it so much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we're constantly fighting a battle between our ears, you know, and like it's a blessing and a curse to really, to be a writer and all the things that, you know, all of our quirks and our nuances, and without getting too terribly detailed, man, you have some funny nuances, man. You are the cleanest human I know.
Yes, sir. I was going to say, I've never seen a shower like the one in that house we were talking about earlier. That was the first time to see shower with multiple heads. And, you know, at that point, if you were in that house now, I'd be like, Cody, let me jump in that shower real quick. Yeah. But I didn't want to do it at that time because you weren't as well versed with my nuances yet.
Yeah. 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 Josh wakes up at 5:30, 6 in the morning, somewhere around there, give or take. And he has to get up and he takes a shower and then he'll pace. And pace
for
and pace
hours.
For a couple of hours, yeah. Thinking about songs. And then by the end of the day, Josh has probably walked about 5 miles and taken at least 3 to 4 showers.
Every day. To the every point day. Where when I'm traveling, I even make, Cass, my TM or whoever's traveling with me at the time, stop so I can take truck stop showers. And I think part of it is a clean thing. I think the other part of it is I do my best thinking. In the shower, I've had so many song ideas, so many lyrics come, and I don't know why it is. I think there's something about the hot water, man, that like slows my body and my mind down enough to where I can actually, grab these thoughts that are constantly going through my head. And so, yeah, part of it's because I'm a weirdo, but the other part is because it helps me with my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you've told me that. You told me that a long time ago, whenever. You came out to the Sonic Ranch and you're like, I'm going to go take a shower. Am I fucked up or is like his third one today?
Dude, no? if I'm out there at that studio, I wish I could take 3 or 4 showers, man. It's nasty.
Yeah. If you get a windstorm out there, Josh, you might need like 5.
At least, man. At least.
Yeah.
You remember the first podcast you were on with us, Josh? And you were late. You had to go get that haircut.
I had to look good. It was an important show that night, man. And I went to get the haircut, and I ended up at this barber school. So I went so I could look better and feel better and walked out of there with the stupidest fucking Dumb and Dumber haircut I have ever had in my life.
Yeah, you look like Lloyd Christmas.
I did, man, and I was quite upset about it and was trying not to let it affect me for the rest of the evening.
And it looked like they had taken a bowl and put it on your head and did the Dumb and Dumber.
And I don't even want to tell you the ridiculous amount of money that I paid at that barber school for that stupid haircut. Insane.
I figured it'd have been free because they're learning. You say it, just do
you
it.
You would think. But no, sir, it was not free. It cost me like $60 and my self-esteem.
They should have paid you.
Yeah.
I agree. Unreal. I'll never forget that haircut. I probably remember that haircut before in that show. No, I'm just kidding. That ain't true.
Hey, Josh, I want to, if I could bring up your relationship with Billy Don Burns. I was kind of prepping this morning and I looked, and first of all, I want to start by Brothers of the Music. Like what is that? Like that was felt like a podcast behind the music album thing that yep. you guys did. I know that was a couple questions there, but
that's all right. Billy Don, I met him 10, 12 years ago, something like that. Actually, the first time I met him was at Layla's on Broadway in Nashville, where y'all came to see me play. And I had found his music about a year before that and just connected with it to the point where I got the title of one of his songs tattooed across my chest, Honky Tonk Singer. And I found out he was going to be down at this bar on Broadway. So I drove from Maryland. In the middle of the set break, I just walked up to him. I had a pearl snap button-up shirt on. And I didn't say anything. I just opened my shirt. And he saw the tattoo on my chest. And he tells the story. He said, I knew right then that I liked this kid. And I knew that he was just as stupid as I was. So that's kind of, we built our relationship from there, started doing shows together and writing together. And he's, Billy Don makes no secrets about who and what he is. And that's something that I could relate to and also really respect. So we've done a million shows together at this point and have been all over the country. And during COVID, he had the idea to do a joint record. And he found an independent label, Rusty Knuckles, out of North Carolina, that was interested in putting it out. So we decided that the coolest thing we could do would be to just go into a studio and turn a couple mics on and just sit there and trade stories and songs. And that's what we did. And, you know, neither one of us are huge selling artists, but it wasn't about that. It was more about just having it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it felt like it was something you just felt like you had to do.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not about how many you sold.
Nope, not at all. You know, Billy Don's been doing this over 40 years, running around singing his songs in bar rooms for people. And he's 70, he'll be 74 this year. And, you know, not just him, but all of us are on a time limit. You know, we're all on a time limit. So when he came up with that idea, I didn't even have to think about it. Yes, I'm in, because there's going to come a time where he's not here anymore. And that record's going to mean more to me than it already does. You know,
he is he's a hidden gem, man. You know, we've done two of his songs, and you know, shit, I'm ashamed. I hadn't talked to him in a while, and I forgot to ask about him the other day whenever you were over here, you know. So shout out to Billy Don Burns, man. We've done some shows together, and man, he's special. He's a really unique songwriter, and he has lived those songs, and he's got some stories, man, that
yes, poor guy.
I don't know that I could even tell some of the things that I've heard he's gone through. I mean, statute of limitations would probably be up now, but you know, that dude,
you know, he's lived a hell of a life, man. He doesn't like to talk much about it, but he was a paratrooper, and then he left the army and decided he was going to move to Nashville, and he moved to Nashville in 1970. So the Nashville he knew is the Nashville that we all romanticize. You know what I mean? He was there when Willie and Waylon and, you know, all these guys were still there, still making music, and he had relationships with all of them. So he is, you know, those guys like that are getting fewer and fewer as the years go on. So he's a living link.
I feel he's one of the last ones.
Yeah, man. It's getting to be a thin herd. So he's walking history, man. And he was around all those guys and around all these events that we all hear about and the music that we all love. He was there when it was being made. So to sit and listen to him talk is like, you know, it's like a walking, talking museum, man. Like you're just in the presence of this guy who was there for all of this stuff. And, you know, he's definitely one of a kind. You know, he had a publishing company with Hank Cochran, Hank Cochran's one of the most legendary songwriters there's ever been, and not just country music, but American music in general. You know, he's lived a life, that's for sure.
He's golly, you know, and like you said, he was there, and he's got a song called "I Was There."
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, he was there, man. He saw it. He knew those guys, and like I said, some of those stories, man, it's just like, he has some of the wildest stories I've ever heard.
Yep. And the messed up thing about it is they're all true.
They're true.
They're all true.
You know, there's some stories about him down in Mexico that just, golly, man.
And then there's songs that come from those stories, like mm-hmm. Running Drunk in Mexico.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Like I said, if you want to know, there's a song in there that he probably has that pretty much tell you exactly what's going on.
Yes, sir. He does not hide who he is or the things he's done. And that's one of the things that makes you love him, you know?
Well, very cool. Well, I wanted to bring that to people's attention because I didn't know anything about it. And, you know, I probably spent 45 minutes with that this morning.
Awesome.
And thanks, honestly, I skipped to the storytelling part. You know,
they're my favorite parts too, man.
I wanted to hear the stories first, and I'll go back and listen. But yeah, it's called Brothers of the Music, Volume 1 and 2. Just came out.
Yeah. It was fun, man. It was fun. Anytime you get to be around a guy like that, well, I mean, there aren't any, there's no one else like him, but anytime you get to be around him, it's time well spent. Just don't let him talk you into any insanity. I have on a couple occasions, and I've learned my lesson. We were in Philadelphia one night playing a private show for a biker club. And, you know, bikers tend to not be the most attentive music fans. They're there to, you know, drink and party and have a good time. And it's just me and Billy Dunn. We don't have anyone else with him. So, you know, these bikers are being pretty loud, and Billy Dunn is infamous for cussing crowds that aren't listening like dogs. Like, he will go off on a crowd that he doesn't feel is listening to him. And that's exactly what happened. He told him that they were going to shut the fuck up and listen to him, or he was going to fight every single one of them, and that they better be ready to die because he was. And the whole time, I'm standing next to this, at the time, 67, 68-year-old man looking at him, because if something goes down, I'm going to have to get involved. I can't let this 68-year-old man fight a motorcycle club by himself. I'm going to end up dying in Philadelphia because of this crazy old man mad that they won't listen to his songs. There was a night in South Carolina where similar situation. Somebody at the bar was mouthing off to him. And one thing led to another, and before you know it, he had the guy against the wall with a knife to his throat, and he comes running out. And I got this story secondhand. I wasn't there for this, but the guy that told me said he comes running out. He didn't know what was going on. All he sees is Billy Don come running out to the car, and Billy Don looks at him and says, "Mail me my check." Hops in his car and peels out of the parking lot. Yeah, he's a good one, man.
I've seen him cuss a crowd.
I bet, man. I bet.
Oh yeah.
It's you know, if you're not the one there with him and responsible for him and standing next to him on stage, it's quite entertaining. If you're the guy standing next to him on stage and is going to have to, you know, become involved in whatever ends up happening from his actions, it can be a little hairy.
A little unnerving. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you think. That's what you're sitting there thinking, like, dude, you're going to have to fight your way out of here. You're going to have to fight your way out of here, man. Like, yeah.
Man, old Billy.
Oh my goodness. But such a sweetheart. And that's funny. It's like sitting here, it's like this, talking about this crazy old guy that tells everybody he's going to, you know, beat their ass. But like, he's really a sweet guy, which is funny to say, but
it's the truth, man. He is one of the nicest, kindest, most caring people you will meet. He'll give you the shirt off his back and the last dime in his pocket. Like, yeah. And then there's the other side.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I've got some funny stories about that guy, but Billy Dunn, I need to give him a holler, man. I miss that.
Yeah, we're doing a show together Saturday in Missouri.
Dude, I need to call him. Tell him I said hi.
I will. This will be the first time I've seen him in over a year. We talk, you know, pretty frequently, but this will be the first time I've seen him in quite a while.
Well, what do you got going on? What's your tour schedule looking like for the rest of the year?
Man, playing anywhere that'll have me. I don't know how personal you want me to get here, but my therapist and I came to the conclusion that singing these songs that I sing, because as you're well aware of, sad songs are my favorite. And I really love sad songs. And, you know, the sad songs that I write come from my life and the things that I've been through. So my therapist and I have been trying to figure out a way to get me out of this depression that I can't seem to kick. So aside from the medications that I'm now on, she seems to think that if I stop singing these, you know, horrible heartache songs that put me back in situations that I've been through that have hurt me throughout the course of my life, that it would greatly help my mental state. So I'm working on a new batch of songs that I'm going to go in and record as soon as I get them done. I have about half of them. I still have about half to write. And then I'm going to go out on the road with the band and do what I used to enjoy doing, which was mixing my original songs with the music that I love, classic country covers, that kind of stuff. So that's the game plan, I think, for the rest of the year, to have some fun.
So are you saying you're writing happy songs now?
I'm trying, man. I'm trying. They are still kind of, topic-wise, they're still sort of the same, but they're not as slow and sad and morose as I'm known to be. They're a little more up-tempo and like Tom Hanks in That Thing You Do. I need something catchy, something snappy, something people can dance to.
Yeah. Sounds like the music business. But, you know, I mean, like, you're not going to be able to go to a show and not play Damn These Birds.
No, I'm going to have to always do stuff like that, man. And that's okay, because songs like that, especially songs that deal with addiction, that kind of stuff, that's so far behind me. You know, I've been off hard drugs for 10 years. So that kind of stuff is a little more easier to sing about than, like, you know, heartbreak and all that kind of shit, you know, the more recent sort of stuff. So
anytime you need some help writing happy songs, I don't know that I'm the right guy to call, but you know,
I save all my sad stuff for you, buddy.
I know it, right? That's what we seem to be good at that.
He calls Kendall Marvel when he wants something happy.
Yeah.
When I need something, that, man.
Yeah. When I need something peppy, something snappy, something fun. Yeah.
Call Kendall, man.
You know, Kendall's, gosh, dude, you know, we put 12 songs on the last record. Kendall's on 6 of them.
Wow.
You know, it's.
Well, Kendall, I mean, there's a reason for that too. He's, in fairness, you know, we're making light of it, but he's an amazing songwriter as referenced by his track record. You know what I mean? Not just with you, but, you know, stuff outside of you. He's, you know, I used to sing a Kendall Marvel song in bars without realizing it was even a Kendall Marvel song, that starting with me, the Jake Owen cut a long time ago, like probably 15 years ago at this point, 10 years ago, something like that. I used to sing that every night in bar rooms, man, for, you know, sitting on the stool singing, play something I know, you know.
Yeah,
I would pull that song out, because even though it was a mainstream country song, it's super well written, and it actually has, you know, feeling behind it, and is about a real situation, you know. So I've dug him a lot longer than I even knew who he was, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, and I write a lot with you and TJ, but, you know, Kendall's up there, man. That guy is, and he's a, what the, you know, the three of you guys have in common is that, and I probably write the most with y'all three, but the thing that, I don't know, it works well. He's up there with you guys. It's a strange thing how we can just sit down and I know if I sit down with either one of y'all guys, we're going to have a song. We're going to do it, you know?
What I really like about Kendall is his sense of melody. Like I feel that melody isn't my strongest point. I think lyrics are my strong point. So working with a guy like that who has an ear for, you know, earworm melodies, you know, melody lines that are going to get stuck in your head that you're going to hum for 3 days and drive you crazy. That's what I really like about working with Kendall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that comes from his background. You know, he's been in town for 20 years now, you know, and you're going to pick all that stuff up being around, you know, that side of the business for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's cool that you know, he's done that and he's very good at that, but that he wants to come over to this side, you know, because he helps to make all of us better.
Yes, sir.
My coffee cup says, love the one you sip. You had mentioned earlier about the one you love. Love the one.
There you go.
I just realized my coffee cup says, love the one you sip.
All right. I didn't realize it's about that time, dude.
Oh, shit. Well, this hour went by quick, man. Thank you all very much for letting me come
on. We're not done. I was just looking at the clock.
Yeah. Yeah. Still, the hour went by quick. I was like, God dang.
No, we need to do something that we normally do, and it's a segment that we just have a good time with. Not that we haven't been having a good time, but it's called "Why Do I Know This?" And it's rapid fire questions, and you can give short answers or long answers. It's whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Be as short or as long as you want, but it's Bobby Keith and Josh asking those hard hitting questions.
Gotcha.
All right. You ready, Josh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I want to know what your most traumatizing, maybe not the worst, but your most traumatizing injury as a kid.
Okay. So when I was in the sixth grade, I was playing junior league football, and, I'm a skinny guy now. I was obviously a very skinny child, you know? So for some reason they put me on the line against this guy who ended up being a really good friend of mine. His name was Mike Lee. But Mike Lee as a sixth grader was 6'2", about 225 pounds, just a beast of a human being. He's like 6'8" now. And I don't know how much he weighs, but he was a monster. He is a monster of a human being, but especially back then. So they put me on a line up against Mike Lee, and my pads didn't fit me.
That's how it was back then, man. Nothing fit.
So they, the play starts, and he just bowls over me. Like, he literally, like, picked me up, and I went flying and cracked my sternum.
Oh my God.
Damn. Yeah, dude. Yeah. And that's actually the only injury that I had as a child. But I still remember it plain as day. I remember what getting hit by that big motherfucker felt like. And as we got older, we ended up going to the same schools and became really good friends, man, and would laugh about it. And yeah, that was definitely my most traumatizing injury.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go with what is your least? Wow, these are all negative today. I didn't realize that. What's your least favorite ice cream?
Least favorite ice cream. That's a tough one, man. Because I have a horrible sweet tooth. Like horrible.
His rider is
awesome. His rider is awesome.
Yeah. Well, Shelby used to give my booking agent used to give me shit because I put nothing but candy and alcohol on my rider. She said, I've never had a rider that looked like this before. It was like a bag of Sour Patch Kids, a bag of peppermint patties.
It's a whiskey.
Yeah, it's some whiskey, some Jack Daniels. If I had to pick, I'd probably something like butterscotch or something off beat like that, you know, but even that, I love sweets, man. So
you're probably going to eat it no matter what if it's put in front
exactly,
of you.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's there, I'm going to eat it.
Okay. All right. And lastly, do you believe in ghosts, Josh Morningstar?
I do. I'm unsure, though, if they're ghosts as we think about them. I don't know how deep you want to go into this. Probably not very deep, but I did DMT and it changed my whole outlook on everything, what we are and who we are. And I think that there's definitely something beyond this. I don't know if it's like woo boo, you know, kind of ghost, or if what we perceive as ghost is just a different form of energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the short answer to your question is yes.
Good. Man, I tell you what, that answer gets so many great responses. That question. I love it. I love
that's
it.
That's a great question. That one's always, that's kind of been one you've had the whole time.
Yeah.
You get a bunch of really different, really thought-provoking answers with that question.
And I think it does actually kind of just gives you a quick peek into that person, you know, kind of how they think. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason behind that question, but I love it. I think it's, and I really liked your answer. So, all right, Bobby Keith,
right, you're man. Up. Favorite video game, past or present?
World Series Baseball, Sega Genesis.
Oh yeah. That was yeah. good. Yeah. yeah. Favorite 2 a.m. meal.
Probably Waffle House and probably the steak and cheese hash brown bowl.
Yeah. Oh yeah, my kind of man.
Waffle House is hard to beat, man.
Yep, especially 2 a.m.
So a morning person or a night owl?
Morning, definitely. I'm up with the birds, man, and I'm pacing. And then about 7:30.
Yeah.
Yep, and pacing and showering. And about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, Papaw's ready for bed.
All right, man. So I added one for this one. So what's your favorite memory that you have with Cody, like since you've known him?
Since I've been around, I don't know if you all used to do them, but since I've been around, there's been two acoustic Christmas shows, right? There's the one that we talked about earlier where I got the horrible haircut. That was at the Bomb Factory. The year before that was at the Majestic Theater in Dallas, right? And I was headed back from a West Coast run. I wasn't supposed to be on that show, but we realized that they were doing it and we were going to be coming through. So I text Cody and Josh and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to be coming. Can I get on the list? And they both text me and were like, well, if you're going to be here, you might as well play. So they let me open the show, right? But what stands out to me most about that night and will always stand out to me, that was the first night that I ever heard a large group of people sing a song back to me that I had a hand in writing. That was the first time that I heard 3,000 people sing, "Must Be the Whiskey." And there's a picture, I think either Chris Couture or Jason DeRamo caught it. There's a picture of Cody and I as I'm hearing it for the first time, and there's tears in my eyes. Cody's got a big old smile on his face because he knew how much it meant to me. That's probably my favorite moment. Now, there's more than that. For example, I loved sitting in the crowd at the Ryman show. I will never forget that. Like I said, I had never felt the things that I felt that night at a concert before. I've always been kind of glad that our relationship at that point wasn't to the point where I was backstage, because I don't think I would have felt the same energy that I felt being in the crowd.
Let me cut you off right there. That's because I had told you, because when I found out you were there, I was like, dude, you know, like,
yeah,
why didn't you get a hold of me? And you know, but you just answered that question because, you know, maybe the experience was different, you getting to see it from the perspective that you were at. And yeah, that's cool for me to hear, because I still was like, he's like, dude, give me a holler, man. I'll hook you up with tickets if you want to sit out in the crowd. But, you know, you never
did. Let me tell you the coolest moment of that night. So you guys were doing, I was sitting two rows behind your mother, directly behind your mom. Like I was here, there was a row in front of me, and then directly in front of that row was your parents. And I'll never forget it, dude. You guys did Mama's Song, right? And you get to the point in Mama's Song, I'm doing all right now, Mama. Yeah, I'm doing okay. And when you said, I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it, man, it still chokes me up. When you got to the point where you said, I'm doing okay, the house lights came up and you kind of shrugged, right? You're like, I'm doing okay. And sold out Ryman Auditorium, all these people. God, it's choking me up now, man. I will never forget that, dude. I will never forget that. It was so fucking cool. Just because this is a crazy thing that we do. It's a crazy dream to chase. And, you know, the chance at having success of it is very, very slim, probably slimmer than winning the lottery or something like that. You know what I mean? There are not very many people that get to the point where you guys are, and to know that, you know, I've respected you guys since the first time I've heard you. And the reason is because I know that y'all have scratched and clawed for everything that you have. I know you spent years singing to no one in bars. I know that you made those 12-hour drives for little to no pay. You know, I know that you all came from that. So I've always had such admiration and respect for you guys, because I know that you've worked your ass off to get where you are. So to be in the Ryman Auditorium, which means so much to the music that we love, to be right behind your parents and to see, and I don't know if it was planned or not. I don't know. And I don't want to know. Don't ruin it for me. But it was so perfect, dude. The house lights came up and you're just kind of like, yeah, I'm doing okay. And your mom's, dude, it was so beautiful, man. It was so, so beautiful.
That's a beautiful story. That's awesome. I've never heard that perspective from you before on that.
It was awesome.
That's a great question, Keith.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. See,
I told you, here at Team Jinx, we go above and beyond. Oh, I'm going to keep that one in there, though. I like that.
That's good.
It's cool to hear that. It's cool to hear that story, man. That's really cool.
Yeah. What?
I'll never forget it, man. Here I am. What was that, 2017?
That was 2017.
Yeah. October of 17.
It was.
5 years later, man. 5 years later, it still gives me goosebumps and chokes me up to think about. Like, that's special. That's special.
Yeah. You know, gosh, we have, it's funny. You know, we've played a lot of shows together now, and you know, it seems to go by fast, but, you know, we cram, as songwriters and musicians, we cram a whole lot into a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the years start getting away from you. And, you know, we could sit here for probably a couple more hours and talk about shows and funny stuff that, you know, that we've been through and different conversations that we've had. And, but we don't have that much time.
No. You know,
it is what it is, man. And, you know, when we started season three, you know, and you were on one of the first ones when, you know, that J.O. session that we did at the Bomb Factory, where you were late with the chili bowl haircut and all that. And, you know, it was very clear that I lost control of that show, it, you know, to the highest order very, very quickly. But,
man, you put Paul and Ward together, you're asking for
it's to you lose can't control, you lose
you
it.
Know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. And that's really who I'm talking about. I'm not talking about me or you or TJ. You know, you get Paul and Ward together and, you know, Katie bar the door. So Paul is going to be next, hopefully, in the next two or three. But, you know, we started this third season off with Ward. And then we did the second one was basically a new album review. The third one that comes out is TJ. You were season three, episode four. You know, hopefully we can get you know, Paul on, you know, because hear his account of anything is good.
Entertaining.
It's to say the least. Say the least. But all right, let's get to the important things. It's all been important, and I can't thank you enough for being on, but we got to get it wrapped up. It's we've taken up enough of your time. It's been over an hour now, but can't thank you enough for being on with us. JoshMorningstar.com, Instagram JoshMorningstar, Facebook JoshMorningstar. You are easy to find because you are always on the road.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you all for having me, man. This hour has flown by, and I had a long morning, man. Like I said, I drove 8 hours from Tennessee to Maryland for a doctor's appointment, and I could not think of a better way to unwind. So thank you all very much.
Good. Good, buddy, man. You know, our friendship means the world. You're one of my favorite, not my just favorite songwriters, but you're one of my favorite humans, man. So, I love you. I love you to death, man. And, like any other time, man, like we do any other time, if you need anything, give me a holler and, see you sooner than later, hopefully.
Yeah. Right back at you, man. I love you too. Bobby, Keith, Josh, I love you guys. Thank you all so much, man.
Later. All right. So great talk with you. For myself, for Josh Thompson, for Bobby Keith Kilgore, Seth Knows Roseworthy. Our special guest today was Josh Morningstar, and he just peaced out.
he was gone.
He was gone. He was in his car.
He's got to get back on the road now. He's got another 8 hours back to Tennessee.
He's got to go. Yeah, he's got to go take a shower and then drive back to Tennessee. But he is the best, man, and that he may be one of the only people that I could really say that is more neurotic than I am. He is that guy's mind never stops, dude. He is one of a kind, and he is freaking awesome. He just sent me a text message too. Already, thank y'all so much. That was awesome.
Well, we're still going, buddy, but that's all right.
Yeah, we're still going.
You'll figure that out later.
You'll find out when you hear this episode. But I know he's got to get on the road. But like I said, for me, Josh, Keith, and Seth Knows Worthy in Nashville, Tennessee, turning the knobs. You have been a couple in with Cody Jinks. And we thank you so much. Bless you. And we'll talk to y'all soon.